welcome at this meeting of the Select Committee for Finance, where we continue our engagement with the metropolitan municipalities in South Africa. Today we're meeting with the Honourable Mayor. She's the Mayor of the City of Cape Town and her team. Welcome also to the Honourable De Lille. Where's the Committee Secretary? The meeting is inside, it's not outside. I called them already, you can come back. I did that already. Mr. Rento, are there any apologies on point 2 of the agenda?
Joined by our CFO, Chief Financial Officer Kevin Jacoby, and also by our executive director, Dr. Dietla Kaiser, who is responsible for water, sanitation, and basic services. So they will join us. Chairperson, I will start off with agreeing with you that cities are indeed the drivers of change all over the world. It is in cities where everything is happening. And also already in South Africa you find that more than 60% of the total population of South Africa live in cities. And by 2021 it will be 71% of the population living in our cities. So it is going to be important going into the future that the role of cities not be underestimated in terms of economic growth, in terms of all the changes that we want to bring about. So we will give you a presentation on our budget. I can assure you that our budget is informed by our integrated development plan. The Municipal Finance Management Act stipulates that a city budget or any municipal budget must be informed by what is in the IDP. I can also assure you that our IDP is also aligned to the National Development Plan. So we've done all of the alignment before. In our first term between 2011 and 2016, as a city, we delivered on 99% of what we had put into our integrated development plan. And so in this term now, we just continue to build on that foundation. And also for the period from now, July 2017 to 2022, what is also in our IDP is also the political expression of the mandate that we received from the electorate. And the Municipal Systems Act also requires that we must do public participation before we introduce the IDP. And we have done public participation through various methodologies, newspapers, social media, electronic media, town hall meetings, and we've engaged with more than 24,000 Capetonians to seek approval for our integrated development plan. But Jefferson, in our second term, also as part of the Municipal Finance Management Act, every term you have to look at what is called the Organizational Development Transformation Plan. Because if you plan the same way, you can have the same result. So we also implemented an Organizational Development Transformation Plan to look at, you've got your strategy, you've got your plan, and then structure follows. So we have to look at, is this structure aligned to what we want to achieve? And so we implemented the Organizational Development Transformation Plan. Now, and we will continue to do so for the next 5 years. But what we are trying to build in Cape Town that is also in our IDP is that, you know, we will continue to build an inclusive city, making sure that all our communities are included in the programs of the city. We will continue to build a caring city, making sure that in terms of social issues, the most vulnerable in our city, the disabled, women, children, look after. We will continue to build a well-run city well-managed city. As you know, the past 4 years, the city of Cape Town received four clean audits, four consecutive clean audits, 11 consecutive unqualified audits. And so we continue to build on that. But we're also building an opportunity city, an opportunity where, in terms of our economy, in terms of services to our people, that we create the conditions for that opportunity city. Now, our role as local government is to create the conditions that is conducive for the economy to grow, for jobs to be created. So our role as local government is to make sure, creating the conditions by making sure that we have got good infrastructure. So we spend 6 billion rand a year on infrastructure development in our city. And then what we do, we split the 6 billion rand into 40% of the 6 billion rand goes into maintenance and repairs of existing and old infrastructure. And then 60% of the 6 billion goes into new infrastructure. Because if you do not repair and maintain your infrastructure, it costs a lot more when you have to renew that. And so that is our city contribution towards economic growth in the city. And then, by investing the 6 billion rand, we're then hoping for the crowding in effect by the private sector to further grow the economy. So that is the opportunity city that we want to create. And I will give you some stats later on the unemployment rate in the city of Cape Town. But we also want to build a safe city. And I must confess, Chairperson, that is where there are major challenges, how to build a safe city. We do have our own Metro Police, and their constitutional mandate is to make sure that we enforce by law, that we deal with traffic fines, traffic management, and then thirdly, that we need to have a crime prevention strategy or plan to prevent crime. And then every year we submit our crime prevention plan to the Provincial Police Commissioner. And the Provincial Police Commissioner then together with SAPS, and SAPS is, as you know, a national and concurrent power. And so we then try and work together around the issues of crime. But what is fighting in Cape Town is the issue of gang violence, drug abuse. I will not say that we've lost the war against drug abuse, because for as long as there is a supply and demand, it's growing. And as you know, these criminals are always one ahead of us, because most of our statistics around murder is influenced either by alcohol or drugs. So building a safe city has been and still continues to be one of our major priorities. So, Chairperson, in the next 5 years, we have committed ourselves to actively work towards the development of our environment and of human and also social capital. We want to continue to offer high-quality services to our people and provide support to businesses in our city and continue to be a leader in local government. So in doing all of this work, a Chairperson, is guided by 6 principles, which are resilience, sustainability, transformation through the transport orientated development. Now, that one, as you know, the challenge in all cities today, we are faced in dealing with the apartheid spatial planning. I think it's an indictment on all of us in this country, that we have not been able to actively address apartheid spatial plans. If you look at a very good initiative by our late Tata Madiba when he became the president, he said, we want to build 1 million homes in the next 5 years. Good intentions, we all supported it. But if you look at where did we build the 1 million homes, we actually built it further and further away from the city. If you have, in Cape Town, for instance, we used to have before 1994 Mitchell's Plain and Kailisa. Already cities 35 kilometers outside of the city center, away from opportunity. After 1994, we continued to build even further down Makassar. So we've not really addressed the apartheid spatial planning and all of those open spaces that we still have. And this department is meant to make sure that no longer do we take our people further and further away from opportunities, but that we bring them closer. So any urban development will be guided where we've got transport. Because the old idea in the past 20 years is to dump people somewhere. They have to find a way in transport, spending 40% of their income on transport, and that's not fair. So through the transport-orientated development program, transport is leading any urban development in the city. So we have identified a lot of open spaces in the city, close by train systems, close by bus exits, where people can actually get into a taxi, and that is where we are building Cape Town. That's where we are integrating Cape Town. To deal also with our public spatial planning, and Brett will speak to it also a bit later, is that we have released city on land, 16 pieces of land that belong to the city in Salt River, in Woodstock, and in the city center to bring about that integration. And so we have got many projects, and our IDP document is on our website. We've got many programs, we've got many projects that we want to take forward in the next 5 years. And Jefferson, I've got no doubt that with the 27,000 people working for the city of Cape Town, that we will be able, again, like in the previous term, complete at least 99% of our IDP. If I can just take you through the presentation briefly around Cape Town's population and the current future. As the very first one that says Cape Town population, current and future. Yeah. This is the stats that we're giving you here comes from StatsSA. And it comes from the mid-year population estimate. And as you can see there, in 2018, Cape Town 4.254 million, and progressively we will be growing. So that's part of the more 71% of people that will live in cities by the year 2021. But there's an interesting dynamic if you look at the breakdown of Cape Town's population. What we call the millennium, how they want to be called. And those we classify as people born between 1980 and the year 2000. And so currently this group, they are now between 18 and 38 years old. And soon they will reach their prime working and spending years. So their impact on our economy is going to be significant. Because this millennium is just a different group of people. They are in, technology is more important for them. They don't stay in a job for longer than 3 to 5 years. They're moving all the time as technology is changing. Where in the past, we used to find people can stay in a job for 50 years. And you can look at the sharing economy, the issue of Uber, Airbnb, and all of these new things. And this millennium, in any economy, you will have to accommodate them because they are the future. And so Cape Town is well placed to absorb these millenniums as far as technology is concerned. We are the only city in Africa with more tech startups than anywhere in Africa. We as a city support a number of growth areas and organizations in those areas. So we're pointing this out to you because this will be repeated in any other major city. That is something that we need to be aware of because it will significantly impact on our economy going into the future. Then if we can go to the next slide, we sort of just giving you, I assume it's page number five, some of the dwellings and the basic services in Cape Town. So in 2016, 82% of households in Cape Town live in formal dwellings, and that's about 1.03 million. We have got 11% of people living in informal dwellings, and those are your informal settlements. We have got 203 informal settlements around the city of Cape Town. 203. And that is because of urbanization and people are moving to the cities. And so we have got a special program designed to deal with informal settlement, and it's called the Upgraded Informal Settlements Program, to provide the basic services but also to upgrade them. But then we also have 6.1% of our households living in informal backyards. And that is why a few years ago we said that the least that the city of Cape Town can do for people living in backyards is to provide them with basic services, water, electricity, and sanitation, because they're part of the waiting list of people that are waiting for housing opportunities. The next step is wrong, and I've just confirmed this with the source where it's coming from. It says in 2016, Cape Town was ranked second after Joburg with the highest household access to basic services. In fact, Cape Town was number one. So I just wanted to correct that. And then you can see under basic services how under water, sanitation, refuse disposal, and energy, that is also from SETSA, that is what we have delivered. And then, just briefly on the economic growth in the city of Cape Town. Cape Town is contributing 10% to our country's GDP. I wish we can get back some of the 10%, but that's not that lucky. So in 2017, the GDP of Cape Town stood at 445 billion rand. And so, so you will see that the GDP in Cape Town in the rand value is marginally higher than that of the Western Cape, and it's also notably higher than South Africa, that is the GDP per capita. So Cape Town's top three economic sectors are finance, community services, and then of course trade and tourism. And then just to give you an example of our trade deficit in the recent years, as a result of exports from Cape Town, from 49 billion in 2013 now to 82 billion in 2017. And we can go to the next page, that's Cape Town's labour market again. Our working population is about 2.8 million. Cape Town's labor force comprised of 2 million individuals. That was in the second quarter of 2018. And then employment stood at 1.6 million in the second quarter. And this shows you for the 8th consecutive quarter employment growth in the city of Cape Town. So the broad unemployment rate in Cape Town is at 22.6%. That is the most recent in the second quarter of 2018. And this was the lowest reported broad unemployment rate relative to other metros. And also compared to the country's unemployment rate that's currently at about 27%. Briefly on health, you will see that, and I just selected HIV and TB. HIV, you can see we've been able to reduce the prevalence from at the rate of 7.5% and then 18.95% that was the rate in 2016. And we find that the number of residents in Cape Town is registering with our clinic for ARV is steadily increasing year after year. And we're happy because that has led to the reduction in the number of HIV/AIDS cases. TB. TB is another major factor, but we've also seen a downward trend since 2010, and the decline suggests that improvement in TB outcomes being achieved in recent years. But I will also admit, still a lot of work to do here. I think a TB is curable, and you know we need to maybe also do more on the prevention side. What I've mentioned to you earlier on around climate safety and our challenges in building a safe city, Cape Town's climate statistics highlight a major challenge for our citizens and residents. Compared to the rest of South Africa, Cape Town continues to experience the highest contact crime. That's murder, attempted murder, sexual crime, and common assault, and robbery with aggravating circumstances. Not something that we are very proud of. It is something that we're all working hard with national government to try and improve. And like I said, gang violence and the drug trade is a major, major challenge. Just to sum up here, person, before I give over to our finance person, an aging population will have wide-ranging impacts on Cape Town. I spoke about that. Cape Town has witnessed an increase in both formal dwellings and informal and backyarders. The basic services in Cape Town continue to increase, and despite the challenges, the employment rate is also progressively increased. We're doing, and we have to do still a lot more in upskilling our labour market, especially the new entrants into the labour market. And then the point that I raised about millennials will play an influential role in shaping the economy of and the new ways of working going into the future. We've been able to reduce HIV rates, we've been able to reduce TB, and climate safety remains a major challenge for us. Just in closing, Chairperson, we have submitted our, as we have to in terms of legislation, we have submitted our IDP to the National Treasury for assessment, and National Treasury regarded our IDP as the best in the country. It is certainly the city's most innovative attempt to take local government to the next level. Chairperson, I've been joined by our Chief Financial Officer, Kevin McColby, and Dr. Gisela Kaiser. I will give over to Kevin to take us through the financials. And then last week on the 29th, the committee also asked if we address water and transport. Yeah, and so after Kevin, we'll do transport and then water. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. You've got
Skipperson, so you will stop me if I talk too fast.
And you
must have
said
drink today. Yes, I was rather.
You are very fortunate that you get a lot of food. I'm very observing what happens in Tahiti. You are very fortunate to look at the rest of the time. Which pursuit of your day?
And see, I apologize on the last weekend when myself was being late. We were sitting in an agriculture meeting and we really didn't feel our noses, but I was trying to feel more comfortable in this committee. It feels more like home. So Chairperson, my name is Kevin Schrager. I'm the Chief Financial Officer. And thanks next to me is Dr. Gisela Kaiser and Special Fortune, Water, Transport, Finance. Okay, so just in terms of the city results over this last period, which is 2017-18, our financial year runs from the 1st of July to the 30th of June. We've just compiled our set of financial statements and handed them over to the Office of the Auditor General.
In time.
We haven't had a problem yet of not doing that in time, but obviously it's the quality that's too important in our year. We did have a very strange year. I must admit, if you consider that finance never operates in isolation of the organisation, but with the draft, us trying to plan around finance, etc., and support the process of rectifying and safeguarding the city itself did lead to different numbers which were not listed within the city. So, as a city, we ended off the financial year with a capital spend percentage of only 72.95%. That includes that new water program that we were implementing at that stage. We didn't spend to the extent, but that's obviously, and Gisela will cover that maybe more broadly in her presentation, but that's because we were trying to adapt at the same time, putting capital aside within our legislative framework, and we didn't want to spend unnecessarily if our plans had changed slightly. So that water debate will come up a little bit later. If you look at the city of Cape Town, what it's proved to be consistent with is that it's able to spend around about 5.96 billion rand per year. So this last year, we were able to spend with only 5.6 billion, and that's because a lot of our resources were allocated to help rectifying the problem that we were experiencing. Chair, as an organisation, we are usually underborrowed as an organisation. Our total borrowing is equal to 6.869 billion at the end of 2018. It's a very low gearing ratio for the city. But at the same time, we've been able to generate adequate cash to carry our capital and our infrastructure investment up until this point. But in future years, as we now explore the water resilience component, we are going to have to go to the market as an organisation or further our market book. When you look at our debtors, we've got quite a strong relationship with our debtors. We have various policies that support our poor. So as far as accruals are concerned, when people can't afford to pay for our services, we have a relationship with these debtors. Typically people that stay in houses below the value of 400,000 rand, that we refer to them as our indigent households, and they pretty much get all of their services for free and limited to water consumption, for example, up to 10.5 kiloliters per month. Chair, our debtors have grown slightly, and I'll talk to you about the collection ratios, which is important for National Treasury. We looked at our collection ratios in three different ways this year, and the ones that we have a little bit more of a robust relationship with them is the ones that can afford to pay that are not paying for the debt. So if you take a cash coverage ratio that's still sent out in cash returns to the city, our collection ratio has gone down to 91.66%. But if you take the payment ratio that National Treasury allows us to use, which includes advance payments and internal billings within the city, our collection ratio is 93.44. So for consistency across all municipalities, when comparing, our collection ratio is 93.44%. If you exclude the indigent households, because we accrue for the service at the indigent households, and then we write off that debt once we've implemented a water management device, our collection ratios are 96.29%. So our relationship with paying customers is a very strong relationship that we have. There's not many studies that talk about 8 months. I thought maybe you had 40 minutes to my very So 96% relationship is a very strong one. And then if you just have a look at the city, it's quite healthy in the sense that it's got a growth in income from year on year. So we're able to expand on our income by 5.91% and expenditure by 5.83%. And essentially what the city experienced last year is that it actually accrued more than what it anticipated by 2.13%. and it was short term expenditure. So we didn't want to spend on all operating related costs linked to the drought if we didn't have to. For example, Chairperson, you would have heard in the media there should have been ponds, the lease of land for those ponds, etc., for people to collect water. We didn't have to spend that money, so we created savings. Okay. Then just in terms of our capital expenditure, the mayor was talking about IDP and how we invested in the city in new infrastructure versus refurbishing old infrastructure. I've got a different statistic for you. If you just have a look at grant funding on this particular slide, in a capital investment, that actual spend over the last 5 years, we spent 26.5 billion, and from funded from grant funding at 10.647 billion, and own funding at 16.1. I think it's quite healthy to have that mix between own and grant funding, because the dependence needs to be minimized. Some municipalities unfortunately don't have that benefit. And through an organization able to spend quite a bit of money with, you know, our trading services like electricity, water and sanitation, waste management, which is always a good signal as opposed to building soft infrastructure, or just simply social infrastructure doesn't have a return on investment. I'm not going to go through the reasons, Chair. We have various reasons as to why our capital has not been spent. The most significant one for this committee is to understand that there was a water program. There was a capital budget set aside. We were still learning in that time, so that budget created the umbrella for us. And our plan doesn't have to materialize at that time, thank goodness, because savings that we had from the 17-18 year get pushed into the water program for this next year. So it becomes a funding source to help establish our budget. And to a large degree, a lot of us are older than Komoto, so it means that we don't want to just simply go to loans, we don't have to go to loans, etc. So there is a borrowing regime within the city, but fortunately we have the cash to help subsidize some of those costs, so those benefits will move over to those that consume our services. If I give you a good example, Chairperson, where finance costs like interest on external borrowing will now be reduced because of the fact that we have the cash, we don't have to take up the borrowing. So that moves straight on to the consumer. Yes, of course, the city of Cape Town, yes, the community dynamics, we have the contractor performance, etc. These are all normal reasons why an organization battles to spend. We by no means are comfortable as an organization with this level of spend, and the mayor is driving us to explore within our corporate performance charter, and that is that we need to spend 90% of the fund as an organization. Some going past all of these matters. Chairperson, if you can just have a look at how we funded our capital of 5.6 billion over this last year. Borrowings of 2.5 as internal borrowings that took place. So the rate in general service is quite strong, so it's able to lend money to the trading services that require it. There's internally generated funds from tariffs and so forth. The national government has been very generous to us. They gave us 1.6 billion to fund this capital, and there's some smaller sources. Chairperson, we did have a year that saw some of our conditional grants not 100% spent, but it doesn't mean that it wasn't contractually committed. Out of all of our conditional grants we had as a city, we only could not contractually commit 66 million of that. That will be returned to National Treasury. But the balance, the percentage spend that you have listed on the right-hand side on each of the conditional grants that we had as a city. Chairperson, from a financial health perspective, a lot of us want to talk about cash. Our working capital at this moment is cash backed at 4.388 billion. We've got a very strong capital replacement reserve of 3.990 billion, which all form part then of our capital program in the future years. And we have unspent conditional grants of 1.038 billion. We have a self-insurance fund for a large category of our assets. That's quite strong at 578 billion. Most of the savings aren't due to that methodology, but we shift those savings onto, obviously, the public via our tariffing and so forth. Chairperson, our national treasury would prefer us to have a cost coverage ratio of 3 and less, not more than that, although there are some municipalities with more, but our job is not to be a banker. We had a cash coverage or cost coverage of 2.28 last year, we're now at 3. We've got strong enough programs in our current capital budget to help us decrease that. We've operated as a city at 1.5 before, which we felt quite comfortable with, but it does put pressure on the cash to turn your operations over 1.5 months instead of 3. So we have a bit of cash at the moment, but that will influence our borrowing campaign in this current financial year. Just for those that enjoy looking at cash, from an operating perspective, the Auditor General's Office and the Financial Analysts always look at this slide to see if we are going concerned. But from the city's perspective, and only talking about cash then, is that we've been able to grow our revenue sources by 7.1%, and our expenditure grew at 4.58%. So there you will see the free cash generation and free cash generation. Now this is a very important balance for accountants, because you don't want to generate too much free cash, because then you're taxing this current generation for future generations. So it's not a comfort zone. You can see from the previous year statistics, we hover around 800 million free cash, which is a good enough buffer in cash flow planning, but this last year was high, and the reason for that is the under expenditure of operating costs and capital within the city. But you can see that from own funds, 3.8 billion going into that capital program. Chairperson, you will see, if you look at that slide closely, the net finance charges, if you see the 461 million. Can you see that number? The 461 million. That's in a total borrowing environment where one pays finance costs, that number is normally negative. But because the city was underperforming on its capital program, funds are then invested, and we have a positive result because what nets off that is the interest that you get on investments and so forth. So the city has got a very active treasury department in that line. Chair, if you look at our debt in the city, on the bottom in the middle of the slide, what's important is that percentage I disclosed to early on at 96.29% if we exclude our indigent households. Chairperson, we saw some very good growth in our traffic funds. For those that would throw an insult around to say that finding people is not part and parcel of law enforcement, well, we might understand that, but also people that break the law resulting that there have been more traffic officers and so forth, so you could fund them in a particular way. So there's been quite an active campaign this last year with a 29% growth in traffic funds. But this doesn't necessarily mean that the city gets the cash. So that's the other surprise for the city and its financial results, in that the cash collection from funds grew from 17% to 22%, which put a lot more funding in that space of traffic funds. And I can just imagine that that major member that's responsible for that function is going to have more budget going forward, because you can establish that there's a funding source. Chairperson, without any surprise, you see the growth in debtors that took place in water and sewage. Although from a growth perspective, it looks very bad, from a net perspective, not too bad. The reason being is because the majority of that debt is impaired, because the city, as I said to you, which has indigenous households, there's the intention of writing off that debt. So I refer you to the right-hand side of that slide. The mayor asked me to emphasize this, which is important to emphasize, that 1.33 billion was written off for poor households and on their consumer accounts for this last year. So that's part and parcel of a campaign to support our poor households. So business, you can read this, it's very small, but we say that our debt is categorized in the municipality. Our gross debt this year declined, as Susan Kisler and I worked quite hard in ensuring that our gross debt was reflective of what we had within the market. But at this particular moment, our internal debt collection processes are chasing 1.152 billion rand with the debt across all the services that we offer. Okay, thanks, Councillor. And I think we've got 5 or 6 minutes left. Hey, you said you'd get it from me. Yeah, but then I wanted to look at his watch when the sound really
does. I've got my stopwatch here.
Okay, but there's two other presenters, so I've got to be fair.
25 minutes to go.
Okay. Chase, I'm not going to say this, but maybe I should challenge you. If you want to see how effective our revenue collection is, don't pay your bill for 2 months, and then the rest of it will all kick in. So there's a very active process. You can say to me, Kevin, you're just putting anything up there. Fine, just don't pay your bill, we'll rock up. We are tracking our debt as an organization. We're quite serious about people that do pay. I've heard about accounts between 1 million in the market. These are anomalies that are associated with water. But what I do battle with in society at the moment is people taking responsibility for what happens post the water meter on their properties. And one thing that we did realize in the society is that there are many people that have been living and paying for leaks on their properties, which they quickly look for once they got their new bill. And the amount of excuses that kids will get on wild meters of Sahara are absolutely alarming and silly. Although sometimes there are administrative issues as well, one thing I can say is that we have a very responsive environment to correct debts that are incorrectly accrued. So the authenticity and accuracy of our billing system is something that we pride ourselves on. Okay, so those that like financial performance can have a look at these numbers, but they're basically a repeat of what I've said. Where we did have bulk purchase savings, and this is one thing that you don't get from a presentation, but from the presenter. If you look at bulk purchases, we buy in bulk electricity and water. You would think because we had a draft that you would attach a saving on bulk services to water, but what you've definitely seen at the same time as the retrofitting of households to harvest water, for example, to grey water systems and so forth, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
But
okay, so that's not my specialty, so maybe I just dug a grave for someone, okay? But what we're finding is people are also retrofitting their houses for electricity. Okay, so if you look at those bulk purchase savings, right about 600,000, what you will find is 600 million, sorry. Half of that is savings for the city on bulk purchase of electricity, and half of that bulk purchase from water. So I do want you just to see bulk purchase and just attach it to water. You had a question, Jack, on the grey water? So what we have seen is that there has been an upscaling in households to go off-grid when it comes to water harvesting or water, etc. But we are finding also grey water systems being implemented and so forth. If you just watch the market and you don't look at the municipality, there was a time, for example, on a 1,000 litre flow bin where you're paying up to 1,800 rand for a flow bin, a device that you use to store water in. Whereas in the past, before the drought, that was selling for 600 rand, and you could pick them up on Gumtree, etc., at the moment for 1,000 rand. So there was a spike within the city on people trying to, or households saving water, and then you see this downscale. So it's a supply and demand space that we find. But we have found that Capetonians have been able to save a lot of water. Capetonians, not necessarily the city of Cape Town, are receiving much international attention on how they have been able to adapt their consumption level to the drought that we experienced. So the mayor will tell you that at one stage Capetonians were spending 1,200 megalitres a day being consumed. We're down to approximately 500. So I'm finishing up here, I'm getting the look from the mayor.
You're getting a new way of life.
Yes.
Yes. A new way of living life.
Yes.
Okay. In
2016. More than that. That's not enough. Let's respect
the
In 2016, in January beginning, Capetonians as a collective consume about 1.1 billion litres of water per day. And then now, as we speak in 2018, we are down to just over 500 million litres of water a day. It's the only city in the world that has ever achieved that. But that, go together with that, it also reduces then the city's income. And that's where Kevin always jumps up and down. I think Kevin, leave the PPN and then we can get over to Brent and transport and then go over to water. Thank you.
Right. Which place are you now?
So lucky with that, you'll see transport. Yeah, you have a
very big bridge. Yeah. You know, where I come from, it's a small town called Portmolot. Always a shock to get back into the circuit coming from the I'm just making a quick note.
No.
Are you on the base you want to address us on?
It looks like this transport challenges and kind of thing that really came to
do it. Yeah. Yeah.
There was something with your respect. There was something you were referring to on the last slide before you closed off on impairment. I just couldn't grasp that one. I apologize here, but...
Are we taking questions after the
question? Yeah, unfortunately I won't be here. All right, my colleague will raise it.
Just
fine.
Point out. 69.
Key challenge is not something you understand properly.
No. You know, he's from Pumalam, he's very talkative. Mystery with sometimes.
Okay, I'll be leaving a few minutes here.
No worries.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I'm going to address the transport challenge. It's Brett Heron. I'm the MECA member, Mayoral Committee member for Transport and Urban Development in the city. I think the starting point is, as the Mayor alluded to this in the introduction, that the transport challenges in a city like Cape Town are not unconnected to the spatial plan of our city and land use in our city. So we have a legacy of the apartheid spatial plan, and we have a legacy of mono-use land uses. In other words, we have areas that are strictly residential and areas that are strictly commercial, and obviously those areas are not, in some cases, in most cases, they're very far apart, and so that results in a trip generation. So we have a spatial and land use challenge in our city, and that is why we joined up transport and spatial planning and formal housing into one unit, so that we could try and address this apartheid spatial plan and the consequences of it, which are that the poorest of our residents are the furthest removed from economic opportunities, and they are spending, based on our own analysis, on average 43% of their household income on the direct cost of the ticket, to buy the ticket to actually travel. It takes 43% of household income for the lowest percentile of our residents. They travel long distances, so they spend a lot of time traveling, and obviously the cost of that. We have an overcrowded public transport system, but we also have a fragmented public transport system. And this is something that we need to resolve, and I think certainly from a financial perspective, we need to resolve quite urgently. I say fragmented because we have rail being operated by Prasa under the authority of the National Department of Transport. We have a scheduled bus service that is operated by Golden Arrow Bus that is operated under the authority of the provincial government. And then in terms of the transport plan, the national transport plan, we have cities introducing bus rapid transit. So we have BRT by the city, we have scheduled bus by the province, and rail by national. And so to achieve an integrated public transport system that is financially sustainable, we need to get all of those functions with one sphere of government, and we propose it should be local government. You can't talk about the transport challenge in Cape Town without alluding to the rail crisis, and it is a rail crisis. We need at least 88 train sets to function at a decent level of capacity. In 2012-2013, I was working with the previous NEC for Transport and Public Works in the Western Cape Provincial Government on getting that up to 110 train sets. In August this year, we were down to about 40 train sets. So Metrorail is operating at a fraction of the capacity that we need in order to meet the demand. And I've been on those trains recently, and the pictures you see on social media, people on top of the train hanging out of the windows, that's a real situation. It's on the Kayalicha line, for example, the central line, our most important line, there are meant to be 33 train sets operating on that line. There are currently 8. So we have a massive challenge in the rail space, and that needs some urgent attention. If we move on to what the city's own responsibility is, as I said, we're rolling out the BRT, and the which is called My City in the city of Cape Town, and called other names in other cities. And we are operating a relatively successful BRT system. We've got phase one that is now almost fully, completely rolled out. We're testing one or two routes, still final routes, before we finalize the infrastructure for those routes. But we are operating, we're providing maybe 74,000-75,000 passenger trips a day, which is, we are very proud of those numbers. You'll see we say it compares pretty well with Caltrain, which is offering about 55,000 passenger trips a day. We operate, if you go to the next slide, those are our routes, which is in phase one, plus our N2 Express service, which is a service from Kayalicha and Mitchell's Plain, which was never part of our phase one program, but which we introduced as we saw the decline in rail and that we needed to help and intervene. So this is a top-up service to assist residents in the Kayalicha and Mitchell's Plain areas as they experience a decline in rail capacity. But we're operating 40 routes, and we operate about 260 buses in the peak hours, providing, as I said, about 75,000 passenger trips on a weekday. So far, since the start of the MyCity service, we have provided about almost 90 million passenger trips. So I think we are demonstrating that despite challenges in other cities, the BRT can be a successful mode of transport and should be sustained in our fleet of transport modes. and should be implemented where an appropriate route. So we are now planning the next phase of our BRT, which is phase 2A, which will connect Khayelitsha and Mitchell's Plain with Claremont and Weinberg. This will be a route or a service that will far exceed in scale phase 1. And we're talking about the possibility of providing access to public transport to about 1.4 million residents living along those transport corridors from communities like Khayelitsha and Mitchell Plain, Gugulethu and Yanga, etc., as it sets out on that slide. And so that this phase is currently in a number of stages. It's in detailed design in some parts. We are actually in construction in other parts where the design has been finalized, and we would very much like to see operations commence in 2021, but I believe we're not going to get there till 2023, and that brings us to the financial, will bring us to the financial constraints. So we have, in Cape Town, a much broader perspective on public transport, as I indicated earlier. We would like to see an integrated public transport system where all land-based public transport is under the authority of the city as the transport authority, and all funding to be national funding that is currently in the transport space to be accumulated and to be implemented in terms of our integrated transport plan and our integrated public transport network plan. So we have a comprehensive integrated transport plan which says how the city transport services should be operated from roads right through to public transport, and we have cascading out of that a detailed public transport network, and we should be implementing that public transport network as the authority over all land-based public transport. We call this our vision of one, so we're talking about one integrated multimodal network, and as it sets out nicely on that slide, I'm not going to go through in too much detail because I really want to get to the financial aspects. So the key constraints are the assignment and funding. We applied in 2012 for the assignment of the scheduled bus service. This is the Golden Arrow bus service that is operated by the provincial government. And in fact, we declared an intergovernmental dispute in about 2016, I think. The mayor and I met with the minister, Dupuy Peters, shortly before cabinet reshuffle, and she agreed with us that she would assign the function to us, saying that there was no reason for her to withhold that assignment. And then I think like a week later she was shuffled, and so we didn't get that assignment, and we are back to where we are, still waiting for the assignment of that function. But it's important to receive that function so we can integrate the service and to receive the funding that comes with the function. So we have the PTOG, the Public Transport Operating Grant, which funds the provincially provided service, and we have the PTNG, which is the Public Transport Network Grant, which funds our BRT. We would like to amalgamate those funds and allocate them so that we have a sensible public transport network with BRT on the correct routes and a quality bus service operated by Golden Arrow on the other routes where BRT doesn't make sense because of demand. So we really need the support of this committee in seeing that assignment take place so that we can realize a more sustainable financial model for public transport.
For the 2019 elections, and you guys might not be there, so please can you help us, because it's now before the NCOP, we're also lobbying.
Yeah, the mayor is now lobbying some more. We really need this assignment to be resolved. It's in line with all national transport policies, but we just don't seem to be able to move forward. The funding challenges are really about the predictability of grant funding and the decline in grant funding. So the next slide shows how if our DORA allocation for the rollout of the public transport network grant or the grant that funds the BRT, the yellow bars are if that funding that we received when we first started this project continued to grow just with an inflationary adjustment. The blue is what has been indicated to us as the allocation that we're likely to receive, and you can see it is declining in real terms. And there's an opportunity for us to apply for a discretionary kind of top-up based on our performance, then we factor that in. But what you're seeing is a decline in real terms in funding for implementing this integrated public transport network, and that is a big risk to our city and a challenge for us to fast-track the rollout of this phase two of the My City service, in that we can only spend, we've got stage gates of planned spending, and we'll only implement a tender if we know that the funding is secured, and we're only getting an indication of obviously a three-year horizon. The next slide is the last slide that the mayor is telling me, is all of this challenge captured in a graph that shows how the funding envelopes we predict will work over the next 15 years, so it's a 15-year horizon. You can see that the operating burden on providing the service increases, and operating burden kind of outweighs our capital expenditure, so which means that we are going to struggle as we roll out the service to expand the service to other areas, because a large part of our funding, both nationally provided funding and local revenue, is going to be consumed by operating expenses. And that again goes back to the spatial form of our city, where we are providing long distances that people need to travel, and so we need to adjust the spatial form of our city in order to reduce the operational expenditure that is going to come with rolling out the service. But we are going to be constrained in rolling out and expanding the public transport network, which is exactly what we need. So I think the message, and maybe I'm going to end there now, is that what we're asking from our National Treasury colleagues is for a predictable source of funding for a future public transport network that will address the legacy of our apartheid spatial plan. We need a predictable flow of funding so that we can plan further into the future, and that we can fast-track some of this infrastructure that we're going to require in order to address the mobility and access problems that many of our residents experience. Thank you, Sophie.
Thanks, Coffee. Very quick. I'm responsible for informal settlements, water and waste. So this is probably my favorite graph to talk to, and I can spend hours, but I know we don't have hours. This tracks the volume of diamond levels on the right-hand side of the graph, which you can see the percentages, and at the bottom is tracking a calendar year. So the red line is tracking this year's diamond levels, and as of yesterday, we were at 65.9%, which is considerably more than a year ago when we were at 35%, and we were 65%. Yeah. A year ago, we were 35%, and we were in a real panic. Back in 2016, we were at 60%. So just to reiterate what the mayor said from a demand management viewpoint, climate scientists have it that this is the worst drought that we could have experienced, and it's got an estimated return period of about 311 years. So the fact that it's such a rare drought, the impact could not have been anticipated, and the after effects of getting through the grant are also, as Kevin mentioned, we are now dealing with a number of financial matters that came as a result of our demand management initiatives. So we recently got a certificate from the International Water Association for achieving a 55% saving without resorting to intermittent supply. That means everybody still had water, and we did this just through a number of demand management measures. What is specifically noticeable, if you can look at the red line at the beginning of the year, just the slope of the graph, that the dam levels are actually falling so slowly, and that is due to all the demand management interventions in the system, both in agriculture and on the urban users. However, much of the state of dams currently makes it a little bit easier to sleep at night. We have no idea what the future holds, and we simply can't afford to not learn all the lessons that we learned from this drought. So, the Western Cape water supply system is jointly operated by the National Department of Water and Sanitation and the city, The city takes about 2/3 of the water from the system, agriculture about 1/3, and other urban centres a small amount. I then have a capacity of about 900 million cubic metres a year. Currently, our restricted allocation is close to a quarter of that at 250. So it really is a very small portion of the total yield in our surface water storage. So since, I think it was 2007, that the reconciliation strategy was first conceived by the steering committee, which is led by the national department. And this is an exercise of matching supply of available water with anticipated demand. Now clearly every year you track demand and you plot it and correct for future growth. But in general, on a trajectory of growth that we have seen, we need to, within the system, provide approximately for 3% growth a year, which is another 50 million litres a day a year that we have to provide additionally. So over time, there were a number of additional sources identified, which then last year we dramatically accelerated, specifically the groundwater sources. Table Mountain Group Aquifer, we've been doing pilot studies since about the year 2000, and the whole intent was to make sure that we could sustainably get water from the aquifer in the long term. The estimated yield of the aquifer is about 1 million cubic meters, which is water that is stored underground. Cape Flats aquifer, there the estimated yield is about, well not the estimated yield, the estimated storage is about 600. So if you compare that to what is in the dams, underground water does provide for additional water sources. It's just a matter of when we can get it on stream and how to do so at the least cost. During last year as well, we triggered three temporary desal plants as well as one temporary relief scheme. And the desal plants are operating. The relief scheme will come on stream by the end of this year. What we learned is that it's not possible technically or affordable to build your way out of a drought, and demand management is really the way to go on that. And I think that in Cape Town we have now tested the limit, and clearly there is a limit to how little water the city can use and what the households can use. But we know that there are still losses in the systems and households still suffer leaks. So we need to make sure that our community is aware to continue saving water and managing their demand. So to make sure that we don't lose the lessons of the drought, we've embarked on creating a citywide water strategy that doesn't only look at the impact of the water and sanitation department, but takes our spatial planning and resilience and everything else in the city into account as well. Water that doesn't come from rainfall is expensive, and one of the key components of our strategy is the demand and supply question. So as I mentioned, growth will continue, so we will have to continue augmenting our supply. But where we do it and with which source we do it is very much is a question of what is the cheapest source, and what we need to do is to program all these water resources with their costs, which we are now finding out as we are working on them. I mean, if you think that Cape Town has been, since we started documenting water supply in 1834, we've been reliant on surface water. Now we're entering into a different way where, from an operational viewpoint, it's very different to operate the surface water scheme than the groundwater scheme or the desal plant. So it really has been a learning experience, and we're now putting all the lessons from our learning into numbers to determine what the ideal augmentation scheme is. Augmented water is expensive. Our bulk surface water comes in at about just less than 6 rand a kilometre, whereas our figures now indicate that the next cheapest source will be about twice that. So it really is a difference, but then of course a source like desalinated water has virtually no limit. It's just how much money you want to spend on that water, whereas surface water is so reliant on rainfall. So we know we will have to continue to augment. It is costly, and we need to sequence this correctly to make sure that the city's financial sustainability
is not impacted upon as it was within the drought. And with the right timing as well, so that we can make sure that we provide water security and resilience against future droughts. Climate change is a reality, and we do not ever want to be in a position where we were at the beginning of this year.
You done? Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Mayor. We start with the last input. Your vote promise will play a crucial role to educate the people in that municipal ward to save water, to harvest water. Where I live, you are forced to harvest water. Otherwise, you won't have a backup in the Rakhasha. You know what Kenman water. Yes. That is the way to go to educate the people. Every household must have a tank. And that's where rural development, treasury, can assist because they assisted us in the MAPA. Yes. We were forced in that direction. Treasury, I'm going to give you the opportunity. Last night when I read your presentation, I was not very satisfied with the content because we are used to the high quality presentation, and I told you in the August, and we received a new copy because we didn't address the figures as in previous presentations on Mangla Room and Nelson Mandela. Thank you for being here. Always remember, when you come to Cape Town, you must always add 60 minutes to your traveling time from the airport. So your flight at least, OR, must be 60 minutes earlier. Yes, then you will be covered here. This is quite a different place. No. This express has got two flights in the air to Bloemfontein and Kimberley. Yes, I'm back. Over to you. I'm going to give you... we can use the presentation. We can have it elsewhere. This one, the updated one. I'm going to give you 20 minutes for that.
Do the diagnostic analysis. Listen to the challenges. Grant funding consists of 66 million rand that we returned to the national treasury. For me, it's a lot of money coming from the northern Cape. Yes. Thank you, Treasury.
Yes, good morning. Apologies again for all the inconvenience. We also went to the wrong building before we were here. We were at the MAC building at the time. I'm Kumoto Baloyi from National Treasury. The first slide that we put together is just to give the financial position using the cash flow that was audited. However, we saw more detail from the CFO's presentation where he added the 2017-18. So at that time, we didn't have 2017-18, so we only ended at 2016-17. So we've got all the metrics, but I will only look at the showcase. We can see that for 2015-16, the resources did well and experienced a net cash increase, where it ended the financial year with 3.8 billion. However, for 2016-17, there was a net decrease in cash of 13 billion. However, it's still in a good position where it ended at 3.8 billion. So generally, most of the metros have been experiencing a decline in cash over the years because of the economic challenges that they are faced with. And with CTF Coast Town, it's got its own special challenges. I will get to the last part where I will highlight them. And what we saw also with the 2016-17 audit, there was a regression on the side of CTF Coast Town, where it regressed from unqualified without any findings for a number of years. And for 2016-17, it had findings. And we are aware it had to do with SEM related to my city. And we are hoping that for 2017-18, the status will go back to the one without any findings. So for the issues that have been presented, especially when you look at electricity revenue and water revenue, it's a serious challenge across. there's a decline in this revenue because of consumption. So this means that metros now need a comprehensive source of revenue because they can no longer rely on their income. But the top case are even in a worse position because of the drought that it's experiencing. So when we looked at the performance of the city, we also looked at the service delivery targets that were set in the city's plan, and we saw that the city has been doing well. The challenge that we have with the service delivery targets is they differ from municipality, and they are not standard, and it's not easy to measure the performance. For example, for City of Cape Town, we saw that it performed at 81% in 2015-16. However, for 2016-17, it was at 71%. There's no correlation between this and the performance of the capital budget. That's where the challenge is. So we are looking at how we can work together, especially that we issued a circular on standard indicators as national treasury, so that we can have indicators that are comparable across all the municipalities. When we looked at the budget, the City of Cape Town table, we raised the same concern where we looked at the operating deficit. However, with the discussion, we understand why the city has operating deficit, because it doesn't provide for grant-funded depreciation. So it also impacts on the statement of financial performance. However, what we communicated with the city was that as much as it's in a good financial position, if you continue with operating deficit, it may not be sustainable in a long term, in a sense that you are not adding to your reserve for you to be able to fund the capital budget, because you need to generate some form of surpluses for you to add in the future. So as much as the city indicated that they don't provide for depreciation for grant-funded, we know that a lot of infrastructure that has gone into the ground has been grant-funded. So how are we going to deal with that challenge? And when we looked at the city's budget, our objective was to determine whether there's alignment between the plan, budgeting, and reporting. The CFO covered clearly the reporting, the outcomes of 2017-18, and the integrated intergovernmental thing. That's a challenge. How do we plan together between national, provincial, and local government for us to achieve the objective? Because if we have this fragmented planning, at the end, the impact on the ground is not felt by the community. So we looked at that when we engaged with the city's budget, and also the social planning challenges that the mayor also highlighted earlier. The fact that development is taking part on the outskirts of the cities, and the issue of providing public transport, because we need to consider that, and where is the Department of Human Settlement taking us? Because if it comes and puts mega projects out there, then you need to provide transport for them. So those are the challenges that we also looked at during our assessment with for the city. So the outcomes of our assessment of the city's 2018-19 budget, the budget that is being implemented now, we found that the budget is sustainable. The city is financially sustainable because it's got adequate cash balances and reserves. And we also look at multi-year, the extent to which they change the budget compared to what they tabled in the previous year. We saw that when it comes to the operating budget, regardless of the challenges that the city is faced with when it comes to water, they maintained minor changes. Like the changes were below 5% between what they projected in the previous year. So we take that as good planning and it's multi-year budgeting. And what we could also determine is that the big change was on the capital budget. And this was because of the implementation of the new water plan. The new water plan brought about new projects that the city had to implement. We remember that in December, you had to pass a special adjustment budget so that you can accommodate the projects that go through the job. So from the plans and the budget, we could see clear alignment of where the city is going, considering the challenging environment that it's operating in. The one that stood out was the water services revenue, because it's declining, and at the same time, with the budget, the tariff, we were also a bit shocked when we comparing the city of Cape Town with other metros. We didn't expect it to be the same, considering the challenges that they are faced with. However, it was a bit high. So the CFO remembers with our engagement, we dealt a lot with the issue of the tariff increases, and we were given comfort to say the public comments were considered. And the tariffs we considered with the final budget, they were revised down to consider this. So as part of our assessment, we want to see whether the city takes into account what the public is also saying. So we could see that when it comes to the draft issue. And what we observed is that the city of Cape Town didn't just say we have this challenge, revenue is dropping, give us more money and not doing anything from their side. There was reprioritization of expenditure to see how can we fund this gap. Even though they approached the national government for disaster funding relating to the grant, there was still more effort done internally. So that's something that we also appreciated during our engagement and how the budget is crafted. And we found that the city's budget is funded, regardless of the challenges over the NSHA. So I think the committee is already aware of how important it is to have a funded budget, because that's how you can meet all your obligations. Because if the budget is funded, that's where we have stories like we hear now where water boards are not paid, ESCOM is not paid. It starts with the budget that's not funded. So from the service delivery side, we saw that this draft is presenting a serious challenge. However, we noted that since the city and Department of Water and Sanitation started working together to see how this can be dealt with, it's really working. There is progress also on the plans that are on the ground. And the fact that the city is ensuring that there's continuous supply of water to businesses, because that goes back to economic development. Because once the businesses feel threatened that they can't be in the city anymore, then what's going to happen to the economy? So at least we could see that as much as there's a challenge, the sustainability of their supply to the core businesses is still maintained by the city. And the fact that there's awareness programs to the communities on how to use water sparingly and all that. So from our side, we could see from the documents that were submitted by the city that there is alignment to the conditions that the city is operating in. And furthermore, we heard about informal settlements. From our previous engagement, we've been highlighting that the plans that the city has for informal settlements need to be improved. We could see that with the plans that the city submitted. There was substantial improvement in the upgrading of informal settlements program. So, and another thing is that with the capital budget, the priorities that the city set, they were clear. We can see that it is from the water plan, the informal settlement, and also the objectives of the strategic framework, strategic management framework. So the pillars and the transformation objectives that we have, they are clear between the IDP and the budget and the BEP. Let's not forget the BEP, because that's where the planning comes together. And the Honorable Mayor indicated earlier that there was adequate repairs and maintenance and renewal of existing infrastructure investment. We could see that also in the numbers. It's there in 2018-19. The importance of upgrading our existing infrastructure, we can't overemphasize it, because it's sustaining your revenues at the same time. Because if we allow the infrastructure to collapse, then you won't be able to provide the services, or it won't be sustainable, then people will not be in a position to pay. And the CFO indicated that they've got a paying group. So it's also about the reputation that the city creates through the service delivery. On intergovernmental planning, we saw that in the Western Cape, it's much better compared to other provinces, how the different spheres work together. However, there's still room for improvement, because there are gaps that need to be closed on how can we make sure that our planning is integrated, not come at a later stage when everyone has their own plan and try to match them. The challenge of urban race, we have it also, is one of the issues that we are also in discussion with other departments to see how can we deal with it. because there's also this devolution of rates. How can it be considered efficiency rating for it to be devolved to them? And the issue of buses integrated transport. We are aware of the issues and the fact that the Minister of Transport didn't grant the final approval because it went through all the departments, National Treasury, even FFC looked at it and it was given a go ahead from all that. So it's something that we need to see how we can push it at the Department of Transport because that's where it starts. To see how these conventional buses can be developed to the city to ensure that integration. And while I'm talking about transport, we also saw that the city has good plans, but the funding is a challenge. So it's how we can work as national government within the constrained resources. We are not saying as national treasury there's more money. We need to work within the constrained resources and see how we can make sure that these plans are implemented. For example, when you look at the city steps and other plans, they are very good plans. But then how do we translate them into implementation? Yes. So with the engagement that we had with the city, we spoke about the BEP and said it's a good BEP, the projects are good, but we haven't seen much progress since when it was, like they started planning. So as National Treasury, we said, it's about time that these projects are being reviewed and to make sure we enter into an implementation phase to impact on the lives of the people. So that's the service delivery and the financial. We also looked at institutional and governance. We were impressed with how soon the city appointed the city manager because normally others will take even longer than 6 months. So that also inspires confidence to say things are working within the city. Because at the time we met, we felt like there is challenges in the political environment. However, it's not affecting the administration. We can see that things are still done the way they're supposed to be done. The city is delivering as expected. So in conclusion, from our engagement with the City of Cape Town and the documents that they always submit to us and our assessment, the municipality is financially sustainable. It has the drought challenge, however it's got plans in place to deal with it. And what we had a concern on was the capital budget performance. I don't know if the CFO can remember, we said, will the municipality be able to spend the full budget? Because we are a bit worried about that. So today we saw that the spend is 72%. But however, during the engagement, there were measures that we discussed to say, the city will be including only projects that are ready in the capital budget for implementation. Because that's how they can improve the performance on the capital budget. And the city's plans are aligned. And the conclusion that we also reached was that we will have robust discussion in the national level to discuss the urban challenges. Because it's also impacting the task force politically if we look at the congestion and everything. So Plaza needs to find a way, especially the Minister of Transport, to also work on the provincial budget issue. Thank you. That's the observation from our side as making sure that from assessing the 2018-19 budget.
Thank you. Any additions from you, sir?
Nothing.
You're covered.
Board members, there you have it.
The two presentations. Lots of information. The reality is, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, we are facing a very difficult NTPPS on a very possible program. That's the reality. We are in a technical recession. That's also the reality. After 2 quarters of negative growth, declining growth. So the money we have, we must then buy it. The fiscal space, okay, you've got fiscal space. Use it optimal to the best of your ability in terms of value for money. Treasury, you said you have talks in terms of the integrated approach What? What was the outcome of it? I was just a daughter now. I'm starting this question first. One thing to have a discussion, the second thing is, what is the outcome? What's the action plan? What's going to happen? What are we going to tell the people outside? Yes, like we experienced last week in the East End. There's a lot of talk, but what is the action plan to go and put on the table for your people in the street? Questions, members? Yeah, Ondo Monakedi. Ondo Monakedi is from Mpopo, and Ondo Sablas is from Mossel Bay, the Eden district.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to welcome the presentation made by the mayor and her team, as well as the president, regarding the service delivery and financial management of the city of Cape Town. And also wanting to commend the city for the best IDP as judged by National Treasury. And for sure other cities can learn from you in terms of making sure that they put together a credible IDP that can guide them in terms of making sure that there is development in service delivery within their area. My first question is in terms of HIV. At the moment, the indication is that we are at 7.5 infection rate, down from 18.9 in 2015. If they could just shed some light in terms of strategies that they employed, which led to them achieving this particular percentage. Down from 18.9%, I think it's a very good achievement, if you could just share that with us. The other one is with regards to problems, challenges of crime, which obviously impact negatively on development, on service delivery. As was indicated, I think, in the presentation, where some projects couldn't work around or were interrupted. I just want to check what new measures are they looking into? Are they, as a city, getting necessary support also from national government, provincial and national government, in terms of ensuring that this serious challenge is actually dealt with once and for all? I know it's not going to be an easy thing, but we can't just accept that the issue of drug abuse, of crime, should stay with us always and forever. So I just want to check, is there some support provincially, nationally, that you are getting? The unqualified audits, which the Treasury has indicated there has been some depression, because now it is with findings. Initially, or in the previous year, it was not, there were no findings, now it's with findings. And I think the process, among other things, is the issue of supply chain management. And somewhere, I think I came across issues of political interference. What are you doing to make sure? I don't know whether that's interference that may be to take the city of Cape Town or other cities, if that could be clarified. But also, these challenges are in the contract management, which directly relates to you. What steps, what plans are you putting in place to make sure that you are able to go back to getting clean audits or at least unqualified audits of you without funds? About this special cleaning, I think the mayor spoke at length on this one. And the fact that they are trying to identify vacant land, pieces of land in the city, so as to show that there is the integration. I'm not very sure as to whether the city is really doing enough. Not long ago, there was a report in the media about some piece of land. I don't know whether it was under the city or provincial government, which was actually being sold to some private individual companies. No? If that can be clarified, so I'm asking, are you really serious about what you have just indicated here, about making sure that there is integration? And, on the issue of information systems, technology, I think you spent in 2017 about 288 and now 345. I just want to understand this, that it also assists the people in the city. Are they able to use this so that they are able to communicate and access information that they need to access business-wise, education, and what have you? Or is it something internal in the city itself only? On the issue of overcrowding and the city also appealing for assistance so that the buses, provincial buses, can be transferred to the city. I think it's a point that should be noted here, and we should also try to work with the Postino Committee, the State Committee on Transport in the HOP, so that this matter can be pursued to its logical conclusion. And lastly, the challenges in the city around the mayor. There was a stage where the mayor was faced with several challenges. I don't want to go down deeper. I just want to check as to whether those did not have a negative impact in terms of services provided in the city. Thank you very much. For those at large.
Chairperson, thank you. I also want to start to commend the mayor and the delegation for the presentation. And please allow me, Chairperson, just to say something else at this moment. I'm a very proud citizen of this country at the moment. You know, I have the benefit of staying my home is in Marshall Bay, one of the best run municipalities in this country. And then, during the week nowadays, I'm a citizen of your city, mayor. And I have also my challenges, but I think, you know, I'm once again fortunate to be able to stay in Cape Town. Let me come to the issues that were raised, and the mayor dealt with that, and, you know, the team quite extensively so. The first thing that I noted down here is the gangs and the drugs. And really, I don't have the answers, mayor, and I also know that that is not really your responsibility or the city's responsibility, but, you know, certain areas in Cape Town is like war zones down nowadays, and you know, obviously I think that, and I'm aware that you will be doing whatever is necessary, but really my plea is that a special effort needs to be going here. People are, you know, small children are being shot at and killed and whatever, and I think that is not something that we as a city, the government or whatever, can tolerate. So, you know, that is just my plea, that we see what can be done there. My colleague touched on the spatial planning and the mayor also. You know, the city of Cape Town normally, quite often in most cases, are leading from the front, and I would really like to see something, a special project that will be showing the way how it should be done. We have seen a few things in the country, other places, in other cities as well, but I still have my reservations because my concern is, Chairperson, with those projects that we saw, is that it's not, you know, according to my judgment, not always properly integrated. And that is something really that I still want to see. Now, the transport issue. In Cape Town, and that is the part that I'm battling with my home during the week, Cape Town has a serious traffic problem, transport problem, And I think it is really chairperson, it's really preventing Cape Town to grow at the pace and rate that it can. Because, you know, to get into to the inner city and out is, I mean, it's a nightmare. So I know that we are working on stuff, and you know, okay, obviously we have heard that it is different levels of government that is tackling this. And I really, I fully support the integration of the system, and maybe, you know, more emphasis should be placed on high-speed rail and stuff like that to enable people, you know, from in and around the city to get to their work. My concern is the confusion, you know, around about 2 o'clock in the afternoon there is a, there is a problem with the people leaving early and the ones that haven't been able to reach their dock yet. So if we can just, you know, maybe attend to that. A question that I have for the gentleman talking about, you know, the capital project. There is a saving on capital work, and I gather that part of that, or a certain portion of that, is also for water-related projects. And my question in this chairperson, I hope, as being responsible people, I hope that we are not going to think that everything is honky-dory now again. You know, really, it's a growing city. We heard that, and we need to make plans for the future, allowing to grow the city, you know, at the pace that it should be growing. The 66 million itself is also, you know, yeah, if you think that as a percentage of the total budget, it's not that much, but still, you know, you can do a lot with that amount of money, and maybe that is something that also can be tackled. Jefferson, then, you know, obviously staying here, you are mixing with a lot of people on a daily basis, and people are complaining about the rates, and you know, obviously also the charges for service consumption. So some people are concerned about that, and they are saying that the city is, you know, billing them out of their properties, and that is just maybe something that we also need to attend to. Chairperson, and then that is just also a personal observation. Well, somebody in fact told me, people are of the view that the cleanliness of the city is taking a backward step. And if I can ask a personal thing around, you know, Parliament here. People are sleeping right around Parliament. People have been very desperate, and they came and they're sleeping on the doorstep of Parliament. And yet, apparently, nobody sees them. If we can just maybe attend to that, you know, to see what can be done for the poor people, to allow them to be accommodated somewhere else. Chairperson, I'm just about done. The informal settlements, I was quite surprised to hear that it's 203. I never thought that it's possible. And yet, you know, the informal settlements, that is something that we really need to try to also speed up, Chairperson. And then, Chairperson, my last question, and that is just, you know, a matter of interest also. We have heard that we are dealing with an aging population, and I was just wondering about that. A city of opportunity, I also would think that, you know, the younger people will, you know, come to the city and, you know, try to get into the new opportunities, and I just want to get some explanation on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member. When you arrived by plane, coming to land from the Falstaff direction, in about 500 meters of the ground, you see the qualification shore. I said, yeah, that's the form of settlement. The same in Mangurung, the same at East London, the same in Port Elizabeth. That's the thing I'm observing. And the question is, what is your plan for the next 15, 20, 30 years? A long-term plan. when you drive off the N2 into Church Harrow, drive on your left hand side, those shanties. When it rains, I wonder, what are they doing? Because the water is running. It comes from prior to 1994. That government doesn't need some long term planning. That's the reality. That's the reality. And now we're backing with it. So, very crucial question that came from Honorable Monarchy. The other one, Honorable Mayor and your team, is the whole question of migration. The influx of people, and we saw the graph. In terms of your water planning, in terms of your housing. What are you going to do? Because I can't see this thing going to turn around. We experience an intimacy. Yeah. Secondary factory, but it's happened. People from the rural areas are coming to Kimberley hoping there's jobs. There's no jobs. They go on to illegal mining there, create their own jobs. So that's the reality we face. What's our action plan to address this? That our children can come in the future, they point to the way they do this and nothing. What's the story you're going to tell? Thank you. Mayor, over to you and your team.
Thank you very much. Some of pick up on some of the rest. I just don't think that we use the word influx anymore. I think what it's called urbanization. And urbanization is a worldwide phenomenon. Influx did take me back to the years when there was some influx control. And, you know, with our new constitution also, people can live, work, play, wherever they want to in the country. But there is a growth of all cities, and therefore as you fly in any airport in our country, you can see that growth, and that is what is called urbanization. It's something you cannot stop. What cities have to do is to learn how to manage urbanization. Now, I have got a soft spot for people. They will be sitting in the middle of nowhere in a rural area, unemployed, not having food or water, and that person saying, I am going to get up now and go look for opportunity. That person I respect, because he said, I'm not going to sit here and die. And so the only place where they can see that opportunity is in the city, so the people migrate towards the city. Yes, its impact on a lot of pressure on our infrastructure, the demand for housing is growing on a daily basis, and as you know, that government is only supplying housing opportunities to people earning 3,500 rand and less. So there are many dimensions there, and this is happening all over the world. I think most of the responses from the city of Cape Town to some of these urbanization challenges, we've learned from other cities, from London, New York, Sydney, Vancouver, that came all over the world. And we are trying our best to manage urbanization. Yes, you spoke about some of the war zones in the city of Cape Town. We've seen a 73% increase in land invasions in the past 5 months. We have removed more illegal structures in the first 4 months than what we have removed in the past 5 years. And there is a direct correlation between the whole debate of expropriation without compensation. There's a direct response. I engage with all of the people where they're invading land, and they tell me in my face, they say, Mayor, if you, they take private land, city land, whichever land gets invaded. They say, if you are prepared to pay for the land, you can do so. But the president said you can take land without compensation. So So the debate around this has also stimulated and then encouraged a lot of land invasion. And we have been engaging with those communities. The problem is that once people invade privately on land, they then demand services, water, electricity, sanitation. The NMFA does not allow us to provide services on private on land. So we've got a number of court cases now. There's the one area called Marikana that's before the High Court now. 60,000 people live there now. And so there are a number of that. If I can talk, and Greg can speak further about it, about the integration of the city. Yes, it is happening, and it's happening slowly, but we went to council because of the planning regime, the Special Land Use Management Act, as opposed to be helping us so that the Pluma actually can do these things quicker. But it's not to be, so we've established a multidisciplinary team that's now fast-tracking all of these projects, and so that we can see that in integration. The issue around HIV and why we've seen reductions, we're one of the few cities, or the only city in South Africa, where the USA grant towards the acquisition of ARVs, we're still getting that grant. That grant is going to phase out over the next 5 years, but in the meantime, we're already investing more so that by the time the grant finishes, we'll be able to sustain it. And that has helped us to reduce the prevalence of HIV in our city. And I'm not all over the show with answering. In terms of the population, the point that I was making here, it's actually an advantage for Cape Town. That we've got all of these millennials in Cape Town, and between the ages 18 to 38. And they complete different groups of people. The way they participate in the economy is different. They're all high tech. You know, they like high tech. They like things to be doing quickly. So our economy currently in the Western Cape and the fastest part of the growth of our economy is in the tech sector. So we will be able to absorb that into our economy like we are doing already. So it's actually an advantage for the city. But as you can see, the Stats SA, it shows, the 65 years and older is also increasing. So that is why we raised it. And then go back to projects and the interruption of projects by gangs. Once a contractor moves in a gang-infested area, those gangsters will approach the contractor and say, we want X number of jobs. That is beside the city requirement in the tender that 20% must come from local. And if the 20% from local, the gangs want to appoint them. They want to tell us who to appoint. So it does interfere a great deal with our projects in the drug-infested areas. And of course, we're working together with national, provincial, on the master drug plan that is in legislation. But a lot more still has to be done because the supply and demand, while the demand is increasing, the supply is always there. And you'll find that in one street in Mitchell's Plain, you can find two merchants living there. In most streets in Cape Town, and I told the community, it's not normal to live next to a drug lord selling drugs to our children. But we are working together with the Western Cape government on what we call an alcohol game changer. Because you can find that the highest murder rate is in the city of Cape Town, Sonyanga, and Gugulethu. And that's also the highest area, with the highest alcohol abuse. So there's a direct link between these things. Taking me to the homeless, yes, there are a number of homeless people in our city, and it's increased substantially. Part of the reason is that Home Affairs closed down the office in the city of Cape Town, where people that seek asylum could go to and get registered and get documented. They had to take a court decision to force Home Affairs to reopen that office. And so a lot of people that came, especially from other countries, had no way to go, and that's why you saw the growth. We are now building safe spaces in our city with ablution facilities, at least, and we're trying to manage it, but you can see it all over the city of Cape Town. And there are a number of reasons for it. I'm going to give over to Brett and to Kevin to deal with transport and the supply chain management issues. And just as a question about the impact of this fight with the mayor and the city of Cape Town, did not impact on our services. Our city continued to run, and we remain focused, and I do my boxing outside. Take it round by round, and until I hit the knockout, but it didn't impact on the city at all. I think over to Brett and to Kevin.
Thank you, Chairperson, and to the honourable members for their questions and comments. I think if we start with the question about integration and the sale of land. The city does sell some of our land, but before we dispose of any land by way of competitive process, we assess it for whether it's needed for our own purposes. And a new process that we introduced last year was to assess it for whether it can be used for our TOD strategy that I spoke about earlier, which is linking transport and land use planning and housing, making sure that housing is well located. So there's a new process where the proposal to dispose of any land is assessed based on its location, whether it can serve our transit-oriented development strategy. So I think maybe the high-profile piece of land that you're talking about or property is the Tafelberg School, which is a provincial government project. It wasn't the city that sold that. In terms of integration and where we can start to demonstrate what we mean by it, last year we launched the Woodstock Soul River Inner City Precinct, a precinct for affordable housing where we're partnering with social housing companies to develop affordable rental accommodation in terms of the Social Housing Act in good locations. Woodstock Soul River, the inner city just down the road, the Fruit and Veg, where at the end of the street, that's one of our sites. And then about 3 weeks ago we launched our second precinct, which is around city-owned land around four railway stations in the Paro CBD. So we're starting to demonstrate what we mean by well-located land and integration. I welcome the proposal that your committee engaged with the Select Committee on Transport around the devolution of the function of buses. We've been struggling, as I said, for 12 of 6 years. We've declared an intergovernmental dispute, but obviously we don't litigate with the national government around that. And we did get the previous minister's approval. She just didn't get the chance to formally sign it off. I think I've answered the question that I was asked around Cape Town showing the way in terms of integration and spatial planning. We've identified some good sites that can demonstrate what can be done when you leverage city-owned land and partner with social housing companies and the private sector to provide integrative opportunities. The transport and traffic, I think the starting point is there's no way we can build roads that will address traffic. So there's a huge amount of latent demand. If we put an extra lane on the M2, you wouldn't even know that we've added a lane, you would still be stuck in traffic. But there's the saying that I think that Canada has billboards all over their country that say, you're not stuck in traffic, you are the traffic. So I think we have to take that attitude. And the idea is to move people from private cars onto public transport. But that is a challenge as rail is collapsing. We know that in the last financial year, compared to the previous financial year, Metrorail in the Western Cape lost 2.7 million passenger trips a month. And those trips can only go one way, and that is onto the road network. And that is why our peak on the roads is now doubled to 4 hours in the morning and the evening. So So we really need to resolve the rail problem if we're going to resolve traffic congestion. Thank you, sir.
I think I'm going to enjoy the same for the rest of my life. I'm part of the solution. I'm a cyclist, so I ride with a bicycle to the
traffic. You do what they do in Holland.
Alright, I have a short contribution. It's from the unqualified audit status without funding. We're very jealous about that, I must be honest. Once you've experienced a clean audit as designated by the Audit Standards Office in collaboration with National Treasury, which is a demonstration, apart from your financial statements, in a true reflection of what you achieved and what the city looks like, is the adherence to legislation. And I think we all, I can reassure you, from a political perspective and administrative, are jealous about again achieving that result. So, like every year, when we finish with our external audit, we take our audit report and we take our management letter that we get from the Office of the Audit General Office, and we break it out into all of the actions that are required. So this is one of the tests that the Auditor General's Office looks to for consequence management, reactivity, how serious the work is taken, how serious we are as public officials, and so forth. I'm quite confident that 96% of what was set aside to be resolved in the year was in fact resolved. There's one small little factor where we wanted to automate, for example, our EKWP workers and that database, where that database has made good progression, and the automation of collecting the data on these workers will only be available in September, end of this month, that we're talking about, that we've got manual controls adequately in the city to get us through the next quarter. But it wasn't one of the reasons for the finding. The finding that we had was in the SEM space, and that was predominantly linked to a procurement of electric buses, which we're busy dealing with at the moment. So all of our matters that we had that had to be referred to MPAC, our city is very responsible, packaged all of those together, represented them correctly within our financial statements immediately as a representation of irregular expenditure, and went off to MPAC based on a recommendation and approval of council. Remember, MPAC does that work for the city. Their report is now obviously due to come back to council. I understand that we've not made it within the financial year, so we've disclosed it again under the irregular expenditure again in our financials, but the Auditor General's Office will be happy with the fact that the city has undertaken consequence management or in the process of it. So all I want to see is that sensitivity be clear and then the continued responsible behavior within the organization. On information systems and accessibility, etc., I was disappointed that they didn't brag about one of the flagship programs, which was the one which he made with Councillor Heron, access to Wi-Fi even on buses. I wasn't involved, but I remember officials walking the punch back to that organisation as she was exploring connectivity of the public to the infrastructure, the IT infrastructure that we create within the city. So that's one of the smaller initiatives, but we have this big backbone called broadband within the city, which is also about accessibility to communities and so forth. On the capital projects, you spoke about when you heard about the 66 minutes. I would never say to you it's a drop in the ocean. I feel exactly the same as you. But I think right at the front, I think we had a very strange year, and that you must appreciate the fact that a lot of the capacity that we normally use for the delivery of our capital programs were isolated in particular to deal with the water program. And the USDG, for example, one of our prominent grants, also contributed towards it. But we didn't want to spend for the sake of spending. That would be the next level of the system. And then from rates, etc., the mayor is quite intricately involved together with Gisela. The main complaint that we are having around consumer sales is in water. I'm also mentioned that it would have been much higher. Gisela and them are continuously reviewing the water program. And also seeing the response from the man upstairs with regards to the water that he's placing in our dams and so forth. We are now at that point where Gisela, myself, her finance team, my finance team are reviewing those tariffs. We've got six different sets of tariffs. And Gisela will eventually advise from a technical perspective whether, from a relief perspective, will it lead to more consumption. Because I think it's we're quite cautious about that. If it would lead, at the same time, you would be aware that any system needs to have a revenue base as well. So we do anticipate that tariff and the increasing of tariff and the step phase are demand oriented. So the higher the tariff go, the less people consume. We certainly don't want to find ourselves, I think you mentioned this, Honourable Member, is that you don't want to find yourself in a position where you haven't learned better. So I explained it to Mako the other day, it's like almost Jesus holding all of these buddies in the cage. She has to start letting them go at the same time, but we don't know if they've still got strength in their wings to fly. So we've got to have revenue coming back into the system, that means that consumption would have to go up to be able to sustain. It's a business, it's a trading system. We are sensitive to it. The mayor has expected of us to resolve on this in the next 2 weeks so that we can give guidance to the public on what's going to happen with those tariffs. I don't think we will go down to the level 4C restriction level. We'll have to take it step by step to see if the community engages properly. And Chairperson, you also mentioned that there are some definite behavioural factors that have changed that. Okay. So I don't know if there's better explanation, but that's the biggest one. We in fact are busy with our planning for our next budget at the moment. And running alongside that is that program that GIZA is responsible for with the MACO member. And they are continuously revising that based on what the needs are of this community. So if there's a certain level of consumption that must be achieved, it must be augmented.
Are you done?
Okay.
The gentleman there at the end?
No.
You very quiet?
No, I recommend that it's covered. Yeah, we would just to give a bit more detail to
honour members to lunch around the congestion. But obviously, just want to add things, there's usually a response that there's a silver bullet to the answer.
There's no silver bullet solution for congestion. And as Maker Member was saying, we can't build our way out of it. We heard from National Treasury that as the transport department, we have the plan. They have an integrated plan. And it's not, I know you mentioned about the bullet train, but it's our integrated plan looks at the correct mode for the correct response. So it's not just BRT, but it's BRT, rail, contact bus services, minibus, taxi, NMT, and all of those modes. But there's two critical things that we need to resolve with around the roles and responsibility, around the devolution argument, and then consistent funding. Not just funding for the next 3 years, but for transport, we need a multi-year financial plan for the next 10 years. It's consistency of funding. Those are the two issues where we can make our plans work, and we will see a response and in terms of transport.
Honourable Mayor, you can wrap up.
Yes, just on the congestion, we are the worst sitting in the country, not in Africa when it comes to congestion. Now, what are we doing to find some relief? The two biggest contributors to traffic congestion in the city itself, all our employees and the provincial government. A number of employees come at the same time and they leave at the same time. So we've been engaging with the provincial government and we have rolled out a plan in the city of Cape Town now for flexi time, so that we don't have to all come to the city at the same time and leave at the same time. So we have done a pilot project in our corporate services directorate. It's now being expanded to all the other directors in the city to work flexi time, where some people that don't need to be in the city, that's not directly linked to a service where you need to open up a counter at a specific time. We're looking at all of that. We're also moving our pay offices out of the city into shopping malls that people can pay their bills while they are in the shopping malls. And we're working with provincial government on the school time. Because you see, when it's school holidays, there's a slight improvement in traffic. And you're really just taking 5% out of the traffic. So that is a lesson that if we could look at school times whereby we could also find some flexibility in there. But that is now for the education department to decide. And we are now engaging big corporate businesses with big staff numbers coming into the city on a daily basis to also look at flexi time. So we hope early 2019 we will be able to see some relief. But by that time, the city has grown more people are coming in. So that is, and we've invested 750 million rand for the next 3 years for the congestion at the waterfront, that big intersection there, and the one in the northern suburbs and one in the southern suburbs. So we are doing some work. I just wanted to say thank you for the opportunity. Most of the information is on our website. The water situation is improving. We are looking at transport, water and finance department are looking at, can we, without the permission of national government, reduce our levels of restriction? And once we've got clarity on that, we will certainly look and bring in some relief to the people of Cape Town. But thank you very much for the opportunity. We're now 15 minutes over our time.
We allowed it, so it was time with well spent treasury.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to take the opportunity to respond to your initial question around the fact that we in discussions with the city and exactly what comes out of that. I think that you'll be aware, Chairperson, that the official engagements that are held twice a year with the city, the mid-year review and the benchmarking process, which is a formal set of discussions around the city performance and its plans going forward, and from there we highlight certain actions that need to come out of it. But further than that, from the city support program point of view, from the unit of the treasury that supports the 8 metros around spatial transformation, there is a much more comprehensive program of action that we co-developed with the city and with Cape Town in particular, and have been relatively successful in delivering support to Cape Town at the right moments in time. And that cover areas around their support on water resilience, where we've brought in international support at particular points in time to our partners at the World Bank, and particularly on water resilience, desalination, and financial issues relating to the water service. We've historically provided support on the TOD strategy of the city and its portfolio of TOD projects and how to prioritize those things. We, through our partners, the World Bank, have supported the city on the evolution of rail and advice in critically reflecting on their programs and their plan for the evolution of rail issues. We've been assessing the property markets and assisting the city assess the functionality and performance of the property markets in Cape Town so that they can better understand those things. And then the areas that we're undertaking work on around backyard support on understanding backyard development, particularly in the Joslova area, work that we're undertaking with the city on understanding big data analytics and how to make use of that, how to reduce the regulatory and administrative processes related to doing business, and how do we reduce the cost of doing business for the particular private sector engaging with the system. And quite importantly, it's built environment performance plan itself, being an intergovernmental plan of action around safety targeting investment. And the city has gone very far, as they've articulated, in being able to start to represent their own investment and the investment of others in those integration zones and those spatial transformative areas. So this is an area where we work relatively closely with the city and in supporting their capital projects. Particularly around capital spend, the last point I'm going to make is around a system that we've co-developed with Cape Town, Itequin and Johannesburg called the City Infrastructure Delivery and Management System. It's a way of methodologically delivering, planning for and delivering infrastructure in terms of the long-term life cycle of an infrastructure, and to be able to address the problems of cities not being able to spend adequately on the capital budget. This is being piloted at the City of Cape Town, Itequin and Johannesburg, and I just wanted to acknowledge that work.
Thank you. Well, I will be listed for those networks as well. Thank you, all the members of the mayor. We acknowledge progress. Definitely, yes. One of the key performance areas of the National Council of Governments is IGR, Intergovernmental Relations. And a lot of work for that. That's it. Because we move as
financial situation in the team to send people in this committee to help my provinces answer this problem. And that's where we step in. We don't build bridges or roads, but we advance IGR. We take departments and administrations to talk. So thank you very much for hearing from us. We're going to the issue now. We've got some good housekeeping to do. The staff will stay behind. I'm sure that you are also released. Thank you very much. And we wish you well. Tomorrow is the 5th of September. We are scheduled to have a meeting at 10 o'clock on the Moneyball Mentum Box, a shorter version, precise like a shorter form of that. Advocate Jenkins is the chief counselor, the main, what you call it, from the legal unit, and will take us through the presentation. The Standing Committee on Finance, meeting tomorrow with Steinhoff, on the Steinhoff matter, and the former CEO who is appearing there, that's going to be quite a tricky meeting. It can become a tricky meeting. The fact of the matter is, Advocate Jenkins will avail himself at 11:30 if there is no hiccups in that meeting. So there is a question mark, because he's the legal counsel for the Standing Committee of Finance, but also for us, the finance family. So Giovanni Wilson put out a notice amending our 10 o'clock time until 11:30. 11:30 until 1. Half past 11 until 1 o'clock. Because we have to go through that document, the bill. Money bonds mentioned. And then discuss our processing of the amendment law in the NCLP. I just wanted to share that with you. And then Friday appropriations, we have meeting at 8:30 until about 11:30. The outstanding meeting with the National Department of Basic Education and Public Works, issues that was raised at the previous meeting. And we said we're going to have a follow-up. We are doing our follow-ups to wrap up our committee program heading for the 2019 first quarter. So we're not going into new things. I think I covered that. Yes, and in absence, I want to thank Shamila Pia for standing in for Solani. Solani went through operation, but well and alive. Fresh and crispy. Thank you for being back. Thank you for Shamila for assisting the Finance Committee in HOP as a standing secretary. All the members, for that we adjourn this meeting. Thank you.
Are there perhaps extra copies? I thought that was not important.
No, you are.